Now it is. Okay, good. Okay. All right. Well, good morning, everyone. It is Henry Harris, and it is Thursday, February 21st, and we are here for another installment of the weekly Emunah Teleform. We're going to start with a review, and then we're going to speak about the idea of retroactive healing, of looking into the past and seeing how it was. As I referred to it, it was always a God-centered world. I just didn't know that. So, what are we talking about in this call? This call is really about two main things. The call is about recognizing that we're having an experience of divine energy. It looks and feels like we're experiencing the people and the circumstances of our lives, the past mistakes that we've made, or all kinds of things. It looks so compelling to me at times that that's really what it is that I'm experiencing. Yet, I've been blessed to see with a wonderful perception that that can't be. That really I'm experiencing divine energy, that there is an unceasing flow of divine energy that is maintaining, creating, sustaining everything in this world. And I am blessed, as well as all human beings are blessed, to have an experience of that, to have an actual awareness of that. So the chair is experiencing the ceaseless flow of divine energy, because without it, there's no molecular existence moment to moment without this unceasing flow. But as far as I can tell, this chair doesn't have an awareness of it, doesn't have an experience, doesn't have the ability to have a consciousness of that ceaseless flow. But human beings do. We do have the ability to have an experience of that ceaseless flow. And that's powerful. I mean, that's incredibly powerful to be gifted with that opportunity to have that experience. Now, of course, when it's misunderstood, it can be quite hard, it can be quite painful, because it looks and feels like we're subject to all kinds of unwanted feelings from a world outside of us, from a set of events and circumstances that are not within our control. Intuitively, I know that I don't have the ability to control the people in my life, the circumstances in my life. I don't have direct control over them. I can't seem to get them, you know, to be different such that I would feel differently. And so that when I'm living in a perception that it's really those things that are sourcing my feelings, that are pressing upon me and arousing my feelings of the times that I'm having, it can feel quite difficult. It can feel I mean, that's an understatement, you know. That's really the source of suffering in this world, is the degree to which we live in that misunderstanding. And these are that understanding, the knowledge that there's one source of divine energy, there's one power, is a mitzvah of Emunah, a constant commandment. And every moment that we kind of affirm that, we look in the direction of that understanding, we are accomplishing a tremendous, tremendous thing. And simultaneously, every moment that we have the option to affirm that the alternative cannot be true, the idea that there are powers other than that divine energy that are sourcing my experience, then we are fulfilling the mitzvah of not believing in idols, of not ascribing to power to anything other than the one source. So that's step one of this call, is the recognition that we're having an experience of divine energy, we're not having an experience of something other than divine energy. The second point that I'm really interested in emphasizing is that our ability to see that, our ability to understand that, is not a function of some particular skill or kind of personality strength or hard work or intellectual achievement. It certainly has helped with openness and a certain sincerity, but fundamentally we are designed. First of all, it's already happening that we're living in that experience of divine energy, whether we know it or we don't. Our ability to awaken to that is the ability to be awake to that comes from a God-given ability. It's called our yashrus. It's called our simplicity. If there is a simple truth behind all our experience, behind all simple, all psychological experience, then it works out beautifully that we are designed with a simplicity that resides within us, so that our simplicity resonates with the simplicity of the world. It's like we're a good fit, you know. We're simple in our nature because God made us that way. There is a natural capacity within us that's not owing to skills or exertion that can awaken. It's almost like the metaphor of a child learning to ride a bike. You know, the child who gets on that bike, there is no reason why he has, there's no evidence that he has that he can ride the bike, because he has no clue right this moment. He doesn't understand balance. He doesn't have balance down. He doesn't have like the motion. He doesn't, it's not there, right? But the truth is it is there. It's the possibility of balance is already within the child. It's just that he hasn't yet discovered it within himself. But every kid who's interested comes to discover balance. That's just kind of how things work. It's really not complicated. And that's true for us in understanding this single simple truth. The single simple truth behind all psychological experience is divine energy. And the great news is that I am, in my nature, without having done anything, I am simple. I am designed to resonate with that simplicity. So that's really the main points that we're touching on in this call on a week-to-week basis. Now, I had the experience recently of gaining some understanding about events in my life that struck me as deeply similar to the Purim story. You know, Purim was a series of events that were tough. I mean, there were looming threats, and there were difficult challenges. A great Jewish woman was taken against her will to be the wife of a despot, and then there was a decree of destruction against the Jews, and there were missteps and what were seemingly it just didn't look good, you know? And the story took place over a course of 12 years. And then there was a salvation. Now, in retrospect, there's all kinds of ways to understand and view the events that unfolded and what was responsible for the salvation. You know, what allowed the Jewish people to move from point A to point B. And it's certainly possible to view it as, look, there were these extraordinarily charismatic leaders called Mordechai and Esther, and that generation of children that prayed on behalf of the Jewish people was a particularly special generation. But we don't have those leaders today, but our children today don't have that same kind of unique, special spiritual purity. All kinds of reasons one could assume and ascribe to kind of the circumstances of the unique nature of those days. And what we'd be left with is a sense that, you know, the world can be a scary place. Harsh and difficult circumstances can arise at any time. And, you know, woe to us if we don't have the right circumstances, the right people, the right kind of know-how to be able to find our way out of those circumstances. That is, in my mind, one way of learning about the story of Purim. And I suspect that any number of sincere people might, if they were to encounter that story, they might inwardly see that, or they might believe that on some level. But of course, we know that that's not true. We know that the story of the Purim miracle is a revelation of the fact that God was always there, right? God was hidden, but he wasn't hidden. It was hidden from our perception, but he was always there. It wasn't like he came onto the scene like a Superman after we called. It was that he choreographed and designed the whole thing. And it aroused us to look to him. And then we looked to him, and when we took our attention off of our kind of our distractedness, and we looked toward him with sincerity, with openness, guess what? He was there. It wasn't that they had the special skills, the special leaders, it was a special response. But it was a human response. It was a Jewish response. There was nothing unique to the circumstances that allowed them that, because what ultimately brought about the salvation was that they woke up to the fact that, wait a second, God was always here. And, you know, I thought about that in the context of a scientist named Copernicus. I don't know a lot about this, but Copernicus was the scientist who initially put forward the notion that it's not the truth that the Earth is static and the sun revolves around this Earth, even though it looks like that. You could be forgiven for thinking, if you're standing on the surface of the Earth, that the sun is revolving around the Earth. And that's certainly what was the theory of the day. Copernicus came and said, it's not true. We on the Earth are revolving around the sun. And of course, a lot of people felt threatened by that. A lot of people denounced him. A lot of people were shaken up. And eventually it became accepted. But the exciting thing is that when Copernicus asserted what he did, it wasn't that he... It was always the case that the sun was the center, and the Earth revolved around the sun. It was always that case. It's just that we didn't see that, and that struck me as true in my life. I've been through my experience of stuckness, of real difficulty, of just, you know, real stuckness in experiences with myself and experiences with others that were hard, and they felt like a lot of suffering. And then I can look back and I can say, oh, wait, I emerged from that situation. Like, if I really were to take, I have all my frustrations and difficulties that show up at different times in my present life. But yet, if I were to take a longer perspective, you know, if I were to take a slightly wider angle lens, there's no question that there's all kinds of scenarios in my life that I went from stuck to unstuck, that my life moved from point A to point B, and it's possible for me to get lost in a feeling in the present moment of upset. I can get caught up in a feeling of upset and just feel like I don't have what it takes. I don't have the right circumstances. I don't have the right skills. I can get caught up in this moment and the feeling of stuckness, and just, you know, it seems to me that the world is a place that is quite prone to real stuckness, and I'm in it, and it really just looks and feels so compelling. And when I step back, I can't help but acknowledge that no, it's been so many times in my life that I've moved from stuck to unstuck, and that when I was languishing and frustrated in stuck, it was also the case that God was there. I had less understanding, but there's no question that I did move. It was the case that my life has not been static. And that, it just simply reminds me of the reality of a God-centered universe. It looks and feels to me that it is a self-centered universe at times. And I don't even notice that I'm standing in what feels to be a self-centered universe. It just looks like the universe. You know, and I'm upset because the Earth is getting dark, and then it's getting light, and then it's getting dark, and it's getting light, and I don't like the darkness. Well, the good news is that it's not really true that darkness is like a reality. You know, it's dark where I live in New Jersey, right? It's dark when it gets nighttime. It's dark in New Jersey, but it's not like the world is dark. You know, like, there's light all over the place. I'm just using that as a simple metaphor, that I'm reminded of that truth, that the world feels like it's the world according to me. And that was the challenge of Purim. You know, Purim is, there's such a beautiful drasha. Purim, the language of Purim is pei resh. Pei resh, if you look in the Hebrew language, the letters pei resh are associated with almost every root word that is associated with pei resh has to do with separation, with distinctive kind of separate parts. So even the word prat, pei resh tes, means detail, and pirud is pei resh dalid, is division, and what else are pei resh words? Prusa, Peresh Samech, is a piece, like a piece of bread, and on. The letters Peresh in Hebrew language point to divided peace, non-unity, right? When we experience a feeling that is painful, and we misunderstand what's true about that feeling, then we live in a world in which we acknowledge and seem to affirm a world that is pieces. There's times where circumstances allow for nice, and then times where circumstances allow for harsh, and nice and harsh. And there's this world of all these pieces that are distinct and menacing and needing kind of management on my part. That's what's possible in a feeling of, you know, it's possible. It's possible to have a painful feeling and come to a conclusion that there's all kinds of parts and that there isn't a simple, single oneness behind it. But, of course, there is the understanding, the possibility of having an experience of a dark feeling, of an upset or a painful or resentful feeling, which I'm not a stranger to, and yet to somehow appreciate, to have a deeper recognition of the truth about that feeling, that feeling is part of a world that's one, the single, simple truth behind all experience points me to oneness. And, you know, it's what's beautiful is that the salvation of, and so the accusation that Haman made against the Jewish people was what he said before the king when he asked him to permission to destroy the Jews. He said, you know, Yeshno am echad mefuzar u'miforad bein hamim. There's a nation that's mefuzar, that's scattered, u'miforad, that's divided. They occupy a state of consciousness that is divided, it's weakened. They're not standing in an appropriate understanding that is, they're weak, they're vulnerable. So now is the time to go after them. And so he selected a poor, he selected a lot, a lottery, which was designed to emphasize his worldview, you know, with the worldview of dividedness and non-unity, we will win. That was Haman's view. And so what was the salvation? When the Jews connected the dots and they saw that their fear wasn't coming from the power of a political entity, it was coming from divine providence. It was divine providence that was arousing within them their fear. It was divine providence, it was the divine energy behind all life that was behind literally everything that they were experiencing, including their fear. And their fear wasn't pointing them to political strategies or to in grappling with circumstances. It was pointing them to the oneness, to the one single simple truth behind everything. And so in the end, the holiday is called Purim, because in joining the letters Pei and Resh is the letter Vav. The letter Vav in Hebrew is the word for and. It's the word of connection. In Hebrew, the word Vav literally means a hook. It's connecting. The salvation came when the letters Pei and Resh were joined. There was an inherent, we saw the inherent connectedness in the lottery. You know, because there's nothing, there's no lottery, there's no power, there's nothing, no thing in this world that really can stand for disconnect. Because all there is a single simple truth. So that's the feeling. That's the feeling that that's the truth behind our feelings that we're looking to. When we encounter all those feelings that just seem to speak to the pain and the fear and the disjointedness of this world, that we should point toward and look toward and relate to the circumstances as source, that fear is itself coming from us. There's no reason to banish the fear. There's no reason to run from or fight the fear, Because the fear itself only has a single source. It's not a problem that the presence of that fear is operating, it's animating my heart, because it itself points to the single and sole source of all psychological experience. And the good news is that when I see that in my life, I can. The Jewish people stood there at the end of this 12 years, and they saw the depth, retroactively, of how there was never anything other than the single source. There was never the case that they were alone and facing a real and independent menacing power. Yes, there was a response. Yes, their choices were consequential. And yes, in our life, our choices are consequential. But the choice, as I see it, is to look for the truth, is to look for the feelings, to what's behind the feelings, to see and to feel the simple reality in our own day. In the course of my day, my mood moves, I get highly discouraged, but then at a certain point I feel different in a variety of different places and ways in my life. And that reminds me of that single truth, and it settles me down. And ultimately, it's never too late. It's never too late to see and attest to the oneness that carries through our lives. No matter what we've been through, it was always a God-centered universe. It was just our understanding that was missing, and it's never too late to see that and have that consciousness transform our past, our experience of our very past, because of course our past only exists in this moment's thought, right? There's no past inherent. There's just the gift of thought about my past in this moment. Okay, I hope that's clear, and I would love to hear if anyone has a comment or a thought or a question about that. So I don't know if you know how to mute yourselves. So I'm going to unmute everyone, and then people can mute themselves again. And mute. Okay. Let's see. All right, if you want to make a comment or a question, please do so now. Okay. Well, as I've said in the past, I don't. I like sharing, and I don't need there to be comments or questions. And I want to wish everyone a wonderful week and a good Shabbos and a happy Adar. And as always, please feel free to be in touch at info@JewishCenterForWellbeing.com or 845-393-1529. And I'll remind you that my main site name has moved to JewishWellbeing.org, although JewishCenterForWellbeing.com will still direct you there. Have a great week, everyone.